Instagram stories for Wednesday, March 25th. I'm your host, Daniel Hill. There is a lot to talk about on the show today. First, Meta has lost two lawsuits in the United States. We will get into both of those. Additionally, there is a creator on Instagram who has 5 million followers who explains what to do when your analytics show that people are dropping off your videos and what you can do depending on the length of the video to keep them watching. We'll also hear from Lauren at the YouTube Creative Insider team talking about some updates that they've made to change the YouTube Brand Connect program to now calling it YouTube Creator Partnerships, plus some other updates. And after the end music, you will hear me do Wednesday Waffle, where I talk about another topic that may or may not be related to social media. All of that on today's episode, but first, a quick word from our sponsors. Welcome back. Let's start with the Meta news, and there are two major lawsuits to talk about here. The first is in New Mexico, where it was found that Meta misled users about its product safety, and this was decided by a jury. The company will face a $375 million penalty for the violations, awarding the maximum penalty of $5,000 per violation for 37,500 violations across two counts. The jury decided against Meta on every count, though it declined to award a penalty as high as the state of New Mexico was looking for, which could have been closer to $2 billion. This is a landmark verdict, and it really centered around the fact that Meta was flouting the state laws of New Mexico by misleading consumers and facilitating child predators on its platforms. The state set up decoy accounts on Facebook to lure suspected predators to profiles that appeared to belong to minors, and they said they found they were flooded with requests and messages from adults. Meta denied these allegations, saying the state's investigation was flawed and that it had been truthful about the safety of its products. The Attorney General of New Mexico, Raul Torres, said, quote, "New Mexico is proud to be the first state to hold Meta accountable in court for misleading parents, enabling child exploitation, and harming kids. In the next phase of this legal proceeding, we will seek additional financial penalties and court-mandated changes to Meta's platforms that offer stronger protections for children," end quote. All right, now that we have that context, let's move on to the second trial. This one has to do with Meta and YouTube being on trial in Los Angeles County all around social media addiction. In this case, there was a young woman named Kaylee GM who used Instagram and YouTube and sustained mental health issues because of her usage of those platforms. In this case, the jury ordered both YouTube and Meta to pay a total of $3 million in compensatory damages, with Meta responsible for 70% of that balance. Jurors found that punitive damages were warranted, and they will deliberate further on the appropriate amount to award. Overall, there are two different things being put on trial here, and the amounts that Meta has to pay in both cases are wildly different. However, I do think this really opens up tech companies to liability for their products, which I think is very important, especially when companies and the employees in those companies knowingly do things that will harm their users for more money. All right, let's move on to some other Meta news. Instagram and Facebook are both adding the ability to link to affiliate content inside posts for shopping. On Instagram, creators will be able to load up to 30 shoppable products in a single reel. Creators will be able to copy and paste their own affiliate links for individual items directly. However, these linked items must be registered with Meta in Brand's Commerce Catalog. Overall, this will be really convenient for anyone who makes money through affiliate revenue. However, for users, it's probably going to be a more ad-layered experience. I personally am not a fan of this whole concept, but I do like when I see someone who's wearing a cool jacket or an interesting pair of sunglasses, and I can tap on them and see how much they cost or where to get them. If you want to learn more about this, I will link to an article from The Verge all about it in the show notes. All right, let's move on to the Instagram strategy portion of the episode. This clip that I'm about to play is from the @creators account, and the creator is named Jun Yu. He has 5 million followers on Instagram, but he explains what to do to keep people watching your videos for longer if you look at your analytics and you see a sharp downward curve. Now, obviously, this is a video and he points to a lot of things. So I'm going to just explain that he gives instructions for how to keep people watching for three different video lengths. The first video length he talks about is up to 15 seconds. The second is from 15 seconds to 60 seconds. And the third is from 60 seconds plus. I know it's hard to follow because it's a video and you're just hearing the audio bit, but I will link to the video in the show notes so you can watch it. Here's the clip.
Hi, I'm June. I've posted content every single day for the last 6 years and grew an audience of over 5 million followers. The truth is, everyone knows that retention is the key metric for growth. But what nobody talks about is how the shapes of these retention curves vary based on the video's duration. So I sat down and analyzed over 1,000 graphs to populate what is good, what is bad, and how to fix it to make this super simple for you. If your video has this duration and this bad retention graph, try adding a rehook 5 seconds in, like asking a question or switching the frame to keep your viewers engaged. Now, if your video has this duration and this bad retention graph, try out a transformation video. The viewers will first see themselves in your struggle and want to learn how they can transform with the method that you used. And lastly, if your video has this duration and this bad retention graph, try stacking visual, text, and sound hooks at the beginning of your video while solving a core problem for a specific avatar throughout the video. I wanna see you win so you can follow for more content just like this.
All right, I picked that video for a couple of different reasons. Number one, retention is really hard. Keeping people watching when they have so much content at their fingertips and very short attention spans is a real challenge. So I appreciate the suggestions that he made to keep people watching. Additionally, Junyu is doing an event in Manhattan this weekend. I personally can't make it, but I know some friends who are going. And if you are in the New York area and you do go, I am very curious to hear whether or not it was a worthwhile event. So if you are going, please let me know. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Lauren from the YouTube Creator Insider team is going to talk about creator partnerships. So if you are working at a brand and you want to work with creators, or you're a creator who wants to work with brands, you're going to want to know about creator partnerships. Stick around. Welcome back. Here's Lauren from the YouTube Creator Insider team talking about YouTube creator partnerships, which is how brands and creators can get connected. Here's the clip.
Over the last few years, we've built a wide range of tools to help better connect creators with brands so creators can form meaningful partnerships while continuing to create content for their channels. To help drive more collaborations between creators and brands, we're bringing together our creator and advertiser tools under one umbrella called YouTube Creator Partnerships. So what's changing? You'll see Brand Connect and our Creator Partnerships Hub as YouTube Creator Partnerships going forward. None of the tools you know are changing. We're simply updating their names to create a more unified identity for the features that both creators and brands use. As of today, YouTube Creator Partnerships is currently available in 7 markets: the US, India, Indonesia, the UK, Brazil, Australia, and Canada. We're excited to announce that we're expanding access to more countries in the coming months.
All right, I'm going to stop it there. She goes into more detail about what's new around YouTube Creator Partnerships, but it's not delivered in a very dynamic way, so I will link to it in the show notes in case you want to watch more of it. At the end of the clip, though, she does talk about a new YouTube shopping podcast series, which I think is very indicative of where things are going, and I like this concept. Here's the clip.
And lastly, beginning this week, our head of content and community at YouTube Shopping, also named Lauren, will kick off a podcast series we're calling Workshopped, aimed at demystifying YouTube shopping for creators. Lauren will sit down with creators in tech, fashion, beauty, and home and lifestyle to answer what YouTube shopping is and how to use it, best practices around incorporating shopping into organic content, how eligible creators can best leverage the continued rollout of new product features and AI, as well as hear success stories firsthand. Check out the first episode with Dr. Shireen Idris this Thursday. And that's it for this week. From the creators of YouTube to YouTube creators, we'll see you next week.
Okay, I just want to pause and say that that sounds like the best job I've ever heard. You get to work with the YouTube team and interview people who work at your company and call it a podcast. I couldn't design a better job if I tried. If you know how to get a job like that, could you send me a DM, please? You can find me on Instagram at Daniel Hill Media. I would love to hear your suggestions. That is going to do it for the news portion of today's show. If you want to hear me do Wednesday Waffle, where I talk about another topic that may or may not be related to social media, stick around after the music.
Let me tell you a couple things that you should know about me. A product manager, but do not have a bachelor's degree. But actually, that's factually a fraction of me. Another fraction's posting content, irregular and irrationally. Still probably won't get a job at the Gram. They forgot, they don't know, or don't care who I am. Ooh. That's why you never see me at the parties and events. My lack of followers must make me irrelevant. Yeah. Don't have a course, a book to sell to make a bag of grand. Not a social media marketer, don't represent any brands. No. Plain to see, don't have an agency. But I got a lot of spam, just putting in my work without the glitz and glam. Won't catch me eating fish, unless it's shrimp or clam. No six pack, no risk, that there's a gym card in my hand. No, don't have a full-time job, but I got a lot of plans. Stay plotting, dropping knowledge on TikTok and Instagram.
Today, I would like to talk about something that I think is going to be a trend, but isn't quite there yet. And that trend is going analog. That can mean a lot of different things to different people, but overall, I think it has to do with slowing down, spending less time staring at your phone, and doing other activities that don't involve devices. It's really hard to do, but I think this is going to be something that grows over time. You may personally be already going analog in whatever that means to you, whatever way makes sense for you. For instance, I have been trying to spend less time watching TV and more time listening to vinyl records. Is listening to vinyl a great experience? Not really. There's a lot of downsides to vinyl. For instance, if you want to hear another song on the album that's good, you might have to walk over to the record player, lift up the needle, flip the record over if necessary, and put the needle down on the next song you want to hear. But it keeps you from staring at your phone. And I think this is something that is going to grow over time, especially in the event space. If you are planning an event in 2026 or 2027, think about how you can incorporate an analog nature into that event. It doesn't necessarily mean collecting everyone's phones the entire time, but are there ways to make that event more analog that people will appreciate and that will foster more connection between the participants? This is something I've been thinking a lot about lately. I personally plan a silent disco once a year, and I'm thinking about how I can turn that silent disco into an analog event, having people more involved in the moment and less involved in their phones. So take some time, think about what going analog means for you and how you can incorporate it more into your life or events that you might be planning. All right, thank you for listening to me talk about something a little bit different, and come back next time for more social media news.